Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Prep before prep. We're going to talk about the pre-prep phase today. Sometimes it's been called maybe a hold phase or a primer phase, but it is a bit unique. And even from those phases and how to set yourself up to have prep just kick right out the gate, be productive and successful. And that's what this phase is for. And when you're ending your off season, this is going to be the transitionary period from off season into prep. And depending on where your off season is ending, it's kind of going to determine how this pre-prep phase is going to look and what the variables we're going to need to really work on to get from different setups in the off season to different setups in prep, depending on where someone's at. So that's what Luke and I will dive in today and hit a little bit on the training piece. Cause we also had someone ask around, you know, should you be increasing your training volume on weak body parts into prep? So we're also going to be touching on that and rolling with nutrition. We talk about PDs, training, the whole setup of how we move people from off season into prep.
Yeah, I think you asked the perfect question. It's like, where are you coming from, right? Where has that off season been? You know, how far gone is the body composition? These are all questions on the nutrition side you'll have to answer, because it changes whether the transition phase becomes like almost the first portion of dieting, right? Or if it's, you know, more of like a maintenance for someone who is on the leaner side, and it's more from a health perspective. But I think across the board, no matter where the off season ends, I do really like the concept of training adjusting in a very similar manner. I think there's two aspects of training changes that I do pretty much across the board. It's a pretty quick deload into that transition phase within the first few weeks. More than likely, you've accumulated quite a bit of fatigue on the back end of that off season phase. You've had performance at its highest clip. Obviously, stress from all the other variables are probably at its highest as well. When we talk about PEDs, food being high. So training does take a pretty quick deload for me straight out the gate to kind of prepare for the fat loss ahead. But despecialization is a big one. And I think that kind of answers that question off the forefront, that as you're heading in the fat loss phase, your tolerance for volume is going to start to drop. But it's also going to push us into a place where the easiest or the lowest hanging fruit within program change is the specialization of split design, because it's extra volume, if you want to think about it, that's utilized in a place where all the variables push us towards progressing. I don't see that fitting within a prep. And so I do think across the board, that's like no matter where you're at, that's a change that's going to happen for most people.
So what do you see that look like? And I guess, does that hold true across the board for anyone that's ending their off season, whether it's from, hey, body fat got too high, or just training stress in general's now beating them up, or maybe it's hunger, appetite just smashed. Overall, is everyone getting a reduction in training moving into that phase for you? Or are there any exceptions that stand out?
The exceptions would be more picking up someone that's transitioning into a prep. Like, I didn't have control of the program design leading into that. But I mean, if it's someone that's working with me, I'm pretty much landing every all season phase with the highest peak volume that they're going to train with. And so I intend on dropping that going into that transition phase. But it's also just a program preference, I think, from my end, where I'm coinciding the training blocks according to that. This is also where I'll implement new movements for prep. So that's another reason why I deload, is because I'm also going into the process of potentially changing those movements for prep that are going to be needed to be changed. So, I mean, for me, there's not many cases that don't drop volume in some manner. It might be more from the volume drop is like set extender stuff for some people, like who don't train very high volume, but some drop is coming every time going into that transition phase.
So for most people, you're running relatively the same training split. So whatever that may be, push, pull legs, push or whatever, just those body parts, say they are doing push twice a week or pull twice a week, that had the little bit extra sets added in, or whatever it could be, drop sets, rest pause, those are pulled back to where across the board, maybe the average work sets per muscle starts to be a little bit more reflective of each other.
Yeah.
Or is it actual like, hey, we're just going to drop in a rest day and spread out the frequency?
Frequency. That is one way to do it. It's not my preferred way of going about it. The one that I will say does change is for like some of my higher, more experienced athletes, I should say, where program design is extremely specialized. So they might actually see a change in the program setup where like I might have a third or a fourth day even that drops off and that becomes a rest day, or we kind of move back into something that's closer to a PPL or a more balanced program design. But you know, it largely depends on experience of the athlete coming in. I will say most the extra work that's added is just removable without split design change. And that's kind of where most change is going to happen. Every once in a while you get some program design that needs to be pulled back to a little bit more of a balanced setup, but it's not often. And you can kind of combat that, like you said, just dropping in an extra rest day and spreading the frequency out. That'll be a large drop in volume. I try not to overhaul too much, but I just need someone responsive. And so that's why pretty much across the board, I tend to lean towards drops for most people.
Yeah. With the added rest day, usually if I do something like that, for one, it has to be someone that has a flexible schedule to do so. Mm-hmm. But then also it's someone that's maybe not quite as specialized. So their average muscle group across the week relatively is the same. And all I need to do is just spread out the frequency and also just more of a connective tissue recovery point. The frequency is kind of becomes problematic and I need to have just more days between those sessions versus just the same frequency, but lower volume. It's still like they're still loading and building up to the same like work sets, which is fine, but it's more so like not doing the job of giving them a longer time period to actually do some connective tissue repair. And sometimes that deload on the back end off season just isn't quite enough. And really it's going to take the whole pre-prep phase to get someone feeling really fresh for that individual. I think you bring out another good point of like the highly specialized person. Cause I have one client, we're doing back actually 3 days a week, legs once and push once. So we're definitely scaling back one of those back sessions and pulling it out. However, other people are going to think like, well, you're going to increase volume in areas like, I actually do bring like leg and push volume up, which that could also run into issues of like accumulating fatigue in those muscle groups as well. So coming into that phase, if you are doing so for like that person, you do need to be more of this introductory period and escalating volume up a little bit versus just throwing it all in week one and changing that program. You could, but you need to be able to, how you can scale that person up in effort or whatever it may be, so you don't drop in so much fatigue of what you're actually trying to be removing the fatigue in this period too. If you've found that with like your highly specialized split designs.
What I would tend to lean towards is, as like a statement for takeaway, is the more program design change that has to occur, the more aggressive I'm pulling back to probably their baseline volume of like where I know they can recover, right? If it's someone who's just like, you know, general program design, a slight drop will kind of get them there. It's nothing too specialized. I'm probably not making drastic drops because I probably have them sitting somewhere that's pretty tolerable. For these extremely specialized, in your case, like three back days in a week, like there's going to be so much shifting, like such a drop in back, but also such an increase in pushing legs that you're probably just overall program volume of the program has got to take a bigger drop than the individual who's kind of coasting at a little bit more of a balanced design, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't want to overcomplicate anything with like programming. No. And a lot of things, it still is a bit reactive based. I just look at the past block as well and said, okay, how quickly did we accumulate into fatigue and what do they look like at the end of that block? Like, are they totally wiped out or not? Well, I might just start the block very similar to what we've been doing and just reactively program, because they might be just fine with knowing like, hey, this is the pre-prep phase and maybe they're the person that's getting more locked in than they were even in the off season, and we see recovery even improve. So, you know, I don't want to totally overcomplicate that you need this massive shift in training either. For the most part, it's just pulling back a little bit, like Luke said, on some like set extenders that might have been in place, or just maybe a couple set reductions. And that's enough to take care of it. And I think getting into the next part of it is like what I bring up is the recovery aspect might improve just from the mental shift. And I think that is like one of the largest benefits into doing the pre-prep phase. I've never heard of a pre-prep phase. I think it's just happened before and we just never like put a title on it. So like everyone's doing some type of transition, and maybe sometimes that transition of a pre-prep phase is just what we've called prep before. Cause for some people it just looks the same. Cause you're like, man, I feel like I've been prep. Like I'm pulling back on my untracked eating. I'm having to get more routine. I'm losing body fat right now. It's like, yeah, for a lot of people, that's why we do the pre-prep phase. Because if we start prep on those people and don't have it with a title, they take too long and to lock in. And then their first 4 weeks of prep are just unproductive, trying to get them locked into routine, cutting out the extra foods. And so with this phase, putting that title to it, mentally people start getting locked in more. Some people, it doesn't matter, but I'd say the majority are still having some more flexibility in the off season. So mentally that shift and just what we put a title on can help people start getting really excited for one, because the phase is changing, but also we've removed a lot of those things that take a long time to get rolling in prep with where someone was not hitting their cardio, like now their cardio is getting in, you know, there's less untracked eating. We clean all that up. And so maybe some easy fat loss happens out the gate here in this pre-prep phase. But then when actually we're like, all right, we are 16 weeks out, let's go. It's really easy to turn that dial and get an immediate response out of your client. So I think the mental shift is huge. And with that mental shift, you might even improve their ability to recover from that same training volume that was just smashing them a bit on the back end of off season.
Yeah, the psychological component is interesting to me, because I've told you this before. I think that's where I've been spending a lot of time, of like trying to pull out. And spoiler alert, a lot of my YouTube content for this month is built around this, like coaching people, right? And I think that where the pre-prep phase serves a lot of people really well is the excitement buildup that you talked about, because they know change is coming. For most people, change from peak all season is very welcome, because they're tired of eating and they're, you know, kind of pushed to the limit there. And so it's like a place of like building that buy-in for prep starting. But also for me, preparing family members for what's to come is a large reason why I start to do that, because there's some, for people who have larger shifts in their schedule or their day-to-day, there's some trial and error that occurs. And if it just starts with the title of prep, then they feel like they're failing very quickly when they kind of go through that like adjustment phase, where the pre-prep kind of has like, you know, let's figure out what this schedule is going to look like and then we'll start prep. But from the coach's end, a lot of times what is actually happening is you're kind of kickstarting the fat loss phase, because we'll talk about this in a bit, but not only does adherence increase, so cardiovascular activity as a result increases, but food's probably dropping, and we're actually going to be able to set a little bit more of a routine schedule where sleep improves and everything like that. So it's really just kind of us testing to see, is this fat loss going to get kickstarted pretty quickly, or is it going to be something that I'm going to have to be more aggressive off the initial bump for prep? And for me, it's almost like a testing period, which is a large reason why I do that deal at Off the Forefront, is how responsive is this athlete if I haven't prepped them before? Like, is it something that I move it and it moves the needle quick? Or is it something that's like, oh boy, we're in for an adaptive response here and I need to get moving on this fast?
Yeah. And we go back to, you know, what you're just talking about at the end of the off season, you're about to see this response, is where I'm taking that person is, you know, based on how that off season ends, because it's different for every person. A lot of guys might get too fat and you're like, man, this is going to be a lot to pull off. But for that guy, it might have just been he needs that higher set point to just be strong in the offseason and productive. But it would be just an impending 30-week prep, so we can make that look a little bit nicer. And what I've done is off the back of the off season, like right when gear is about to get pulled down, I just pull food down pretty good too. Mm-hmm. And those first like 3 to 4 weeks when esters are clearing, just let the weight pull down. And then when gear is getting more stabilized and lower, then like food's moving back up at the same time. So these are kind of working in reverse to be able to retain that off season tissue. And for one, you just be able to feel a lot better kind of immediately. But then I can get some like quick fat loss to happen, get them stabilized before moving into that prep. That is though with the idea that they weren't just totally smashed either, where like you're gone from a phase of off season, building a bunch of fatigue into then a fat loss phase, building even more fatigue. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what they need. But if the main limiter there was just body fat, that's kind of how I'd want to start that phase off. And that would be after like having them do a deload. I could run it that way. Or the other issue is like, I had one guy that the main thing, he was lean. That wasn't a problem at all. It was simply like you could not put more food in them. Like their GI was just pushed to the limits and then you're starting to crop up with, you know, bloating and reflux and just things that are now becoming the bottleneck for off season continuing. And we're getting close to prep. So the point of this pre-prep phase wasn't, I don't need to lose body fat off the guy. I just need him at a low food amount to solve the issue of running less stress to the GI tract, getting appetite signaling back. And if anything, just trying to really just maintain body weight and then do a little bit off the training side. I think the other run in is the guy and that won't always happen is lean. Digestion's okay, but maybe you pull more health markers and they're like,
oh boy,
looking a little off, you know, pressed, and you're like, okay, well, we're going to have prep coming, which isn't going to be any easier on your health metrics. So we just have to make a decision just to pull back on gear, and relatively all the other variables are kind of maintained because everything else is going just fine. And even what might be changing though is like through what we see in the health metrics, maybe we're making shifts around what we saw on labs, maybe cardio is coming up in some way because of that. But for the most part, that's the individual where it's just purely pulling back on the thing that's causing all the stress to begin with. I find later that it's usually there's a mix of a little bit of both to occur. Like labs aren't, they're okay, but usually body fat, you could always start prep a little leaner. Really? not a bad thing. So that's probably the big one really, right, in this phase. And hunger varies. Like some people, usually it's the rare few that are like pushing food that crazy high. Would you agree? Like it's usually the body fat issue that's the one that's the most concerning because most people aren't getting in shape.
Yeah, it's the body fat one, which is why I almost use that as like a testing period for the start of prep. And I'm kind of like building that, kind of like you pointed out, like it's the start of prep in my head, but it's more like me mapping that rate of loss past where prep on the timeline starts. Like, okay, where is this going to trend straight off the gate? Because the body fat set point heading into prep largely determines the rate at which you have to push the prep. And I'd say 80% of cases are too far high, where I'm really just trying to make sure that I'm not having to push this person too fast, because to make actual physique change in the off season, you got to let that body fat creep up, but it's a hard balance for some people to keep it in the realms. And I was victim to this myself during my bodybuilding. Like my set point of like peak strength in off season was too far gone for the start of a prep. Like I was my strongest when I was probably about 10 pounds too heavy to be able to start a prep. So like this was me to a T. So like I totally understand that, and or been through it personally where it's like, man, this portion before prep starts, I even just need to get to a better place. But the one that I find hardest to handle is the hunger signaling already being high is coming into the pre-prep phase. Like the high food person is just like, thank God, please drop my food. But man, the person whose peak food didn't get as high as you would have wanted, but you've got to start dieting because that body fat is where we had just aforementioned. Man, that makes it really tough because the pre-prep phase is already dealing with hunger signaling being higher than what they want. It's like, man, it's about to make for a long psychological battle for prep.
Yeah, I think it's good. Like, for one, you're able to test that person that is going to have the challenging prep, but also mentally have them getting ready of what's to come. And so as a coach, you have a little bit more insight. And you're like, hey, this person's, it's going to be hard and long. This is where we're at. And I think there's a lot of people out there, especially like females, this is where they fall, where you're going to have a female. And I know, and we'll touch on this too, because I want to come back to something you said about your own body fat range, is that a lot of the females you see on Instagram, like the reality of staying leaner in the off season, that also means seeing less progress muscular gain wise. And those females that do stay leaner are like usually the genetic anomalies. So you think like, oh man, I'm going to be leaner this next off season. Very well, you might be. Maybe you found a way that you're implementing all variables differently. And so, but if those things are all the same, usually that same person is not going to be that genetically different to where they're still going to need to get back to a higher body fat point to see really productive growth in the off season. If you don't take yourself there, you might be leaving a lot on the table. I know there's some recent studies coming out about, you know, how much surplus is really needed to actually drive muscle gain, and like a very small surplus needed, extra body fat gain, just, you know, was it productive? And I've seen a lot of people talking about this study, but I think the practicality has to be considered too, that we need to also make sure you're making measurable gains and seeing gym performance progress. Otherwise, you will see a lot left on the table. I've tried to do the lean off seasons, and you end up just almost being at maintenance and just getting stronger. So, for those type of clients, like, just know that's going to be a hard client, and they're probably always going to have a hard prep, and you will improve them, absolutely. But they're still going to have a structure that's going to look kind of the same for all their off seasons, where cardio gets high and foods gets low. And again, it might range and get it better, but it's not going to be vastly different from that girl that's already lean, like going into prep, that keeps her food high, that doesn't lose her menstrual cycle. So those are the rarities. But the reality is, most on average are going to have that kind of prep. Uh-huh. Luke, I want to go back to what you had said, that your actual productive point for off season was about 10 pounds higher than what you should be to actually start a prep. And would you change anything going back? I mean, because obviously you want to be at the most productive point of an off season and grow, but does that make you think any differently on how you would do it? Or are you on par with like, hey, those people just absolutely need to be at that point. We just have to make sure we set up their timeline right to account for that.
Yeah, I think it's just a timeline question. I was very comfortable with and understood the fact that I was not the person in the off season that would be taking photos with my shirt off and posing videos. That's why I always wear baggy t-shirts. But like, from a progress optimization standpoint, for me, it was always just, do I have enough time? And I think preps that went poorly for me were mismanaged timelines. I don't think they were execution based, because I dot my I's, cross my T's across the board. I always think from an optimization standpoint, what would have been best for myself would have been like 6 weeks to 8 weeks of like transition dieting to get myself to a better place, where the majority of my preps in the past just kind of hung out at maintenance before I started prep. And so that first portion of prep had to be guns a-blazing for me to make it. Like the last prep that we did, where I ended up not getting on stage, like if you look back at that rate of loss kind of throughout the first 2 months of that prep, it was like 1.6%, if I remember correctly. I'd have to go back and look at the data, but it was also the earliest I would have been ready, and like it would have been the best package I would have ever put on stage. But it was largely because, one, I'd put myself in a lifestyle position that I could execute at the highest level sleep-wise. But two, we were prepared for dieting even before prep and letting that. Because that prep, I started the transition phase like 247, 246, but I started prep at like 235. So like it was 10 pounds clear before we even started dieting, right? And so that I would have just done that every time. Where in the past, the first six preps I did, or seven, I didn't do that. I think that's where The hard part for that person is the buy-in that prep takes a long time, because you watch these people that diet within 15, 14, 16 weeks, and it's like, it's just not you. And that's, you just got to be okay with that.
Yeah, I think it's even not them if you have the extended off-season person, which even, you know, for my own past prep I did, I was up to, I had a long time off, like over a year. I got up to 262. But I didn't start prep at that because a lot of people are like, hold that peak off-season weight. And maybe there's something like briefly, but I also just challenge the idea that you probably don't need to hold it for very long, because is muscle just going to all of a sudden just fall off? Like, do we really need a solidification phase? And so, and the even research around it, maybe it's, maybe there is some slight bit there, but really you, maybe you're just extending a suboptimal position of health and bloat and poor sleep, and just dropping a little bit off quick could be a productive thing for you. And I ended up starting prep, I think I was closer to 250, and that was just, you know, pulling some of the quick peak off season weight off and then getting back being productive. So I think a lot of people are scared of that because, oh man, I need to hold this all the way into prep. And I used to think the same, but then it leads to the first parts of prep being very slow, and also just inaccurately gauging how much you really need to pull off, or doing things in a holding phase that you probably shouldn't be, just to hold weight, and even training, trying to hold strength when you need just the mindset shift of what should really be happening. And I think that's where we've kind of learned full circle of, like, you don't need to try to hold your peak strength, your peak body weight into prep, because it's going to end up not being the best prep for you. So
I think that last statement you made is why I made the program design change too, like the peak strength comment. Like, we have so many people that are emotionally attached to logbooks that if there's not changes occurring in the program design, it makes it hard for them to detach to the numbers that they've built up to. And so some structuring sometimes will be from that point to, like, hey, like, this is our new reset point. We got to kind of set these new baselines and then progress from there across the prep. So there is a component to that too. But I think what this boils down to is asking the better question of what has to be accomplished in the pre-prep phase for you largely dictates what needs to happen. I would say the majority of people don't take advantage of getting themselves to where the rate of loss across prep is not too high. And if you were honest about it, you probably need 8 to 12 pounds off of your peak off season going into that prep, to be able to run a rate of loss that's, air quote, ideal, or more ideal than where you were from peak off season.
And so I know if you're listening, you're probably wondering, like, well, how long is this phase? Mm-hmm. And there's a few things to think about around that. For one, it's what we kind of have brought up of what do you need coming out of your off season? So, and what is your risk level? Because again, Luke and I speak to a lot of enhanced athletes. So for some guys, we're accepting a degree of risk around health markers to where someone else might need to fully crop up and, you know, manage all those health markers and get them back in check. That might be 8 to 12 weeks for someone that would take. For other guys, it's much shorter. And then you have to, from there, you're also looking at fat loss and reverse engineering your timeline. So if you can get a good gauge of where you should be on stage, how much you should pull off, what's a reasonable rate, that might lend itself to how much prep time you need be. You need some time where you're probably not at a fat loss phase in this pre-prep phase. And then maybe what does that leave left for what you need to pull off to get ready for stage now? And that might be, hey, maybe that's 4 weeks of fat loss, 5 weeks of fat loss, 3 weeks of just kind of being at maintenance. And then that starts off your prep, which leads you timeline-wise in a good point to get body fat fully off and be stage lean. So just reverse engineer the numbers. If you keep going back every week in your off season, you should be also thinking about this as leading up to where you don't lose time, because you're all of a sudden had planned out, well, I'll kick off prep in January 1st. But then now you're going to do the show that's in May. You're thinking, oh no, I actually could use an extra month and maybe I need to push my show back. Now there's not a show in June that I wanted to do. So maybe like throughout in November, you should have thought, well, how am I looking? Like, do I still have some off season time left from a body fat point of view? And you're just kind of always gauging that and looking at it. So that's why Luke and I harp just not on doing the week-to-week check-ins, which, I mean, that's, we do them, that's great. But also you might need to make sure you always have that macro look at your athlete's timeline, your own timeline, to make sure you don't let those weeks just build up. Because in the online coaching world, every day feels like Groundhog's Day, and the weeks fly by all of a sudden. You're like, oh, man, this person's now 20 weeks out, but, oh, they don't look 20 weeks out. So you need to make sure, like, you're always keeping tabs on, look at the toll calendar, where are we at, then go to their weekly check-in and manage that on the weekly so you don't mismanage and have someone that's not getting ready in time for stage, or you regrettably have to tell them, hey, we need to pick a different show.
Yeah, it's not the most time-efficient way of doing this, but I always put a Zoom call about 4 weeks to 6 weeks from the end of their off season as like a state of the union, where are we at, and do we need to stop this and start prepping ourselves for prep? Because I'm not afraid, because like if it's decided that prep is coming, I'm not afraid to pull back on an off season a couple weeks to make sure that prep makes it, because at the end of the day, that's what we present on stage. And those last 2 weeks of all season are probably not as productive as you think they're going to be. So for most people, like, that state of the union for me is how I address that. It's like every off season that leads into a prep, there's a Zoom call about 4 weeks before the end of that off season where we make that decision about where all these dates start.
I think doing the timeline planning is a huge piece for all these athletes, and mm-hmm. You should have your people question, like, what am I supposed to be doing during this phase? So the, pre-prep phase should not be skipped on. It's why Luke and I wanted to hit this one as we're kind of getting into this new year and everyone is moving from off-season into prep. What are things to start thinking about? And hopefully you just heard us say that you should have already been thinking about this, but if you haven't, now you can start probably mapping out and looking at the calendar, what shows you might want to do, kind of where your physique is at currently, and then what that pre-prep phase should actually look like for you. And I think we can wrap it up there, Luke, unless you have something else to add.
No, just be a better athlete and plan. That's all you need to do.
Plan. Well, until next time, everyone, we will talk to you then. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye.